Hey, we're back on Downtown at 5:30. Rich Kimble and Carrie Haskell with you. Our next guest is somebody you know from his work with the Kids in the Hall, the great series News Radio, Hot in Cleveland, and so many more. We're very happy to be joined this afternoon by actor and comedian Dave Foley. Dave, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Can you hear me all right? I have my AirPod Pro in. Is that working all right?
It sounds like you're right in the room and yet still on a phone.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Apple.
Doing good things for all of us in society here.
Yeah.
I have to get to the important question first, Dave. Because my last name is Kimble, I may be biased, but was Hank Kimble, the county extension agent, the best character on Green Acres?
He was one of, I don't know if he's the best character on Green Acres, but I'll say this. He's one of the greatest comic characters of all time.
Better than Sam Drucker, certainly.
A completely original character.
No question about it. So your love of Green Acres, your character's love of Green Acres on News Radio, that was from your real life.
I've been a huge booster for people, trying to get people to watch that show again as adults now. So I know I watched it as a kid, and to realize just what a masterfully written show it was and how beautifully subtle all the acting is on that show, except for Eddie Albert, the straight man.
Yeah, and one of the great Eddie theme Albert. Songs, too.
Oh, my God, it's genius. You get everything you need to know for every episode in that, you know. Kids these days, they don't even know what a credit sequence is.
I had grown up watching that in reruns and stuff, and then in my mid to late 20s, I can't remember what cable network it was. Nick at Night or something was running it. And yeah, it takes on a whole new meaning as an adult, and the comedy of it is so great.
The structure, and you know, everyone loves things that are meta now, and Green Acres almost invented it. You know, I mean, where you'd have Lisa Douglas commenting on the opening credits while lying in bed in the morning as they were appearing on the screen in front of her, that was like just, you know, just incredible, absurdist genius. And, you know, and they're running gags. As I said, for me, it was like you had a half hour of ENS go every week, you know. It was like this amazing absurdist theater every week.
Well, let's go back to your roots in the beginning of the Kids in the Hall, which has inspired so many people through the years, such a landmark group. What were the inspirations for you guys as young performers?
Well, one of them, was, I guess, for me would have been Green Acres. But as a group, obviously, we were very inspired by SCTV out of Canada, the Special City TV show. And by Monty Python, but in a way that's contrary to what I think most people would think. Like we were inspired by Monty Python to be as little like Monty Python as we could be because we loved it.
Sure.
And same thing with SCTV. Because we loved SCTV, we didn't want to tread on the ground they had walked on.
One thing that I do see that you guys did a great job of keeping similar to Monty Python is sort of the timelessness of a lot of the stuff on that show. Because I went back and watched some episodes of it in the last few days knowing you were coming on. The comedy isn't time specific. It's funny regardless.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was, because consciously, as I said, when we started out, we said we're not going to do any parody of anything because SCTV, we all loved SCTV and they did the best parody ever. You know, but now you watch SCTV and you have to have watched, you know, Fantasy Island to know what they're talking about. So it gets trapped in its own time frame. And really, because I recently heard Eric Idle and John Cleese being interviewed, and they talked about how when they were starting out, one of the things they deliberately decided was they were not going to do any satire. Because they said everyone was doing satire in England at that time. They said people had like 4 or 5 years of nothing but satire. And so they said, we're not going to do any satire. And as a result, their show is timeless. So it was, you know, if I think both of us, it was a reaction to the predominant comedy of our time.
We're talking with Dave Foley here on Downtown. It's hard for me to believe that
and
news
I'm being
radio.
I'm being boring.
No,
hey, everybody, listen up. I'm being very academic about comedy.
Well, we like that. I can't believe news radio debuted 25 years ago. It is and remains to me one of the best comedies, I think, in the history of television, with just an absolutely amazing ensemble. What was it like to be in the room working and being one of those many talented people?
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, sometimes it made it hard to get things done because you're in a room with so many people being that funny and that fun to be with. But sometimes it took our director Tom Stronis having to yell a few times to get us focused to do anything. luckily we had a great director that we loved. That was one of the most amazing casts ever put together. I mean, Paul Finn just did a brilliant job putting the people together. And then on top of that, he put together one of the best writing staff, I think, ever on a television show. He just kept finding people that were of a like mind with himself that he thought were funny. And he made good choices. So that when we all got together, we all immediately liked each other and fit in together. So he did a brilliant job of putting that whole group of people together.
That transition from sketch comedy to sitcoms is one that has made some performers stumble, but you seem to make the transition, made it seem very easy. Were there similarities in the productions of those two shows that made it easier to make that transition?
In that Kids in the Hall, we did about half the show was done with a multi-camera setup. So that was similar. So I was used to that format. I was used to playing, to multiple cameras and knowing my cues and knowing my blocking and all that sort of thing that you need to do to make multicam work. So that definitely was made it easier. For me, the biggest transition was getting used to not working this hard. The idea of having to play one character and not have to put on my fake tits in the morning and wander about in high heels all day.
It was a relief for me when I could stop doing that too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work, getting pretty is really hard work. So it was a great relief to not have to do that anymore. That was amazing. For me, like just acting felt like being in semi-retirement.
I have to ask you about what is one of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's a comedy classic. I loved your work as Bob Haldeman in Dick.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure where you were going to go because I've been in so many bad movies. that was a good one. but yeah, I love that movie. But I grew up during the Watergate era, and I was a precocious kid who would go home and watch the hearings on TV. So for me, it was really fun to get to play, one of the men I grew up hating.
Is there anybody in this current administration, I'll put that in quotation marks, is there anybody you could see yourself playing when they finally make the movie of what we're watching now in real time?
Oh, my God. Well, I've been told many, many times to my deep, deep despair that I could play Lindsey Graham. I'm not sure if my skin wouldn't crawl off my bones if I tried to inhabit his persona at this point.
Hard to summon that righteous anger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To summon it and keep that undertone of absolute insincerity.
Yes. But enough that people can see it. Hey, you've done, Dave, so much voiceover work through the years. Is that enjoyable? I think people say, well, that's got to be easy work. And yet you don't have any other actors for somebody who's worked in close ensembles. You're working by yourself most of that time.
Yeah. It's surprisingly hard work, especially if you're doing like doing something like A Bug's Life was... really was surprisingly exhausting. I didn't anticipate it being so hard. Like at the end of a recording session for Bug's Life, I would be physically exhausted and mentally exhausted because you have to create it all in your head while you're doing it. And you've got to keep this high level of energy up with nobody to play off of because you're usually alone in the studio. I mean, I was very lucky. I had John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton in the studio directing me, and they were great at conjuring up the visuals for me and inhabiting the other characters, and pushing me to have the right level of energy. But man, at the end of the day, I would usually, my voice would be shot and my head would just be mush from imagining all day. You got to stay in a room. You have to do it well. You've really got to believe that you're in those scenes while you're recording those lines. And that takes a lot of work.
So we've been laughing for a couple of days here in the studio at watching you read the letters of James Joyce, who turns out was a very naughty man.
Yeah, I've got a pretty rock solid stomach for that kind of stuff generally. But I was stunned by that. Stunned by the degree to which his predilections ran to the fecal.
Yes. Let's. We've got a little clip that we believe is suitable for.
Oh, you can't run that on the air, can you?
Just a tiny bit. I think this is okay, but if it's not, have the FCC call us. Here we go.
Yeah.
Tell me the smallest things about yourself, so long as they are obscene and secret and filthy. Write nothing else. Let every sentence be full of dirty, immodest words and sounds. They are all lovely to hear and to see on paper, even, but the dirtiest are the most beautiful.
That was brilliant.
That's about the only part you took away.
Yeah, that was it.
I was going to say, there should be a warning thing to parents, if there are children in the room, that you should probably abandon them with wolves rather than let them do this.
I had a lot of fun taking it around the station and sharing that with everybody. I started with the HR person in the office.
Yeah.
She found it very funny, so I was safe at that point.
So she allowed you to let other people hear it.
It's just, yes. Right, it's only a notation in his personnel file, nothing serious.
Yeah, well, that was Natalie Morales, genius to do that. She found those letters and gathered a whole bunch of her friends to come in and try to read them in as austere a way as possible. to try and PBS them to death.
Oh, yes, yeah, very much so. And the ending, I don't want to give it away, but the ending is perfect. You can check it out on Funny or Die. I think the first guest we had who told us about this was our friend Gilbert Gottfried, but you're out there doing things on Cameo as well. What kind of bizarre requests do you get from people on Cameo?
Well, mostly it's really nice stuff. It's mostly people wanting, to have birthday messages. Occasionally people will write scripts kind of for you to do. and some of them don't necessarily make any sense if you don't know who the people that are involved. And some people actually try to use Cameo to get you to appear in their movies through Cameo. Like, they're trying to write dialogue for you to do. And say, so I'm doing this movie, and I'd love it if you could, to read this dialogue, and we'll edit it into the movie I'm doing. And so we have to sort of go, hey, you can't get me to do that for this much money. Like, that's what I do for a living.
I noticed you've had some comments on social media about UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the socially acceptable term for UFOs now. It's something I'm really interested in. And a part I'm really interested in the fact that more people aren't interested in it, considering the fact that the Pentagon has come out. The Pentagon and the Department of Naval Intelligence have both come out and on the record said UFOs are real. They're invading our airspace, restricted airspace, at alarming rates. They do things that defy the laws of physics, and we have no idea where they are coming from, and we have absolutely no way to stop them. So this is something that the Pentagon and the Department of Naval Intelligence have come out and said, and it's been published in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Politico, and still nobody cares.
It's fascinating to me, and we've had, I don't know if you've read any of Annie Jacobson's work, but we've had her on.
I have. Yeah, and I kind of feel like Annie, from what I can gather about her latest book about Area 51, is that she's just become a disinformation agent, really.
Well, some of what she's written about I find fascinating in Area 51, but also she wrote a book, Phenomena, that is about how the CIA has used people who can do remote viewing and have used ESP. And it's fascinating to me mostly to read her work and see all the things that the government is keeping secret from us.
Yeah, and there is a ton of things. Yeah, I just had a problem with when she infers that things like the Nimitz sighting and the sightings off of Virginia, that they could be dark projects, because that doesn't make any sense. Mm. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's obviously, Hal Puthoff was deeply involved with remote viewing experiments and, and I guess Robert Bigelow was involved with some private research on that with NIDS. But yeah, it's amazing. That not only are the government doing these things, but they're doing they're kind of hiring out to independent firms like Bigelow's so that they cannot respond to freedom of information requests.
Have you had any personal experiences with UAPs?
I never have. I've never seen anything. I'd love to, but I guess I started thinking about it just by thinking that people say, oh, it's all anecdotal. Well, first of all, it isn't all anecdotal. There's an awful lot of hard evidence. But even if it was all anecdotal, you'd have to go, well, there's been this anecdotal reports in the millions going on for, going on throughout recorded history. Mm. And so if that's been happening throughout recorded history, we should try to figure out what it is. Even if it is anecdotal, why are all these people mistakenly seeing these things, if that's the case?
Absolutely. Well, it's fascinating work.
I was very
interested to see your thoughts on it. So, Dave, what have you got coming up that we can look forward to?
This is live, right?
Yes.
then I can't tell you right now.
Okay.
But I'm actually starting work on something right now that I'm very excited about, but we won't be making a public statement about it for, I think, another couple of weeks. So, but I'll tell you that there's something that I'm very excited about, and I think the people who have liked the things I've done in the past, I think they will be excited about as well.
What people should do is follow you on social media at Dave S. Foley, and when the word comes out, they'll find out there. No, go ahead.
I really wish I could tell you right now, but it's going to have to wait a couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to, you could tell us. I mean, who's going to hear? It's just us.
No, I get yelled at.
I don't want that to happen. Dave, we thank you so much. We've been fans of your work for such a long time. Thanks for making some time for us, and we wish you continued success.
Well, thank you for having me on. Please have me on again sometime.
Well, we will do that, definitely. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That's Dave Foley with us on Downtown.